Hello, and welcome to the very first Legal Aid Board podcast. My name is Donal Reddington. I'm joined here by Nuala Jackson, the recently appointed chairperson of the Legal Aid Board. And you're very welcome, Nuala.
Thanks, Donal. Thank you for having me.
We'd be interested to hear some of your views on how the Legal Aid Board and how things will go over the next few years and so on. But before we get on to that, maybe you could tell our listeners what is your background in the legal profession and so on, and give a little bit of information on that.
My background in the legal profession, it goes back so long. I have been practicing at the bar since 1989. So I'm now in my 32 years of practice. Before I came to the bar, I did my law degree in Trinity. I then did a master's in Cambridge University. And I then went to the King's Inns. I lectured in NUI Galway before I came into the bar full-time for a year. And then after I started practice at the bar, I continued to lecture in NUIG for a number of years. The impecuniosity of young barristers, you have to continue to, as it's interesting, the bar at the start, when you start out, you have this scenario where you distinguish between your profession and how you actually earn your living. So you have to do something to earn your living, and then the rest of the time you're being a barrister, not a very lucrative occupation at that stage. So as I say, I've been at the bar for a number of years. I would have had general practice for the first number of years. In common with all young barristers, you take work where you can, and you take what comes to you. And sometimes work comes from predictable sources and sometimes the most unpredictable. As time went on, I started to specialise in family law and child law. And in fact, while it would be incorrect to say that you enjoy family law or child law, because it does involve trying to extricate families from situations of turmoil and circumstances where they've experienced problems and difficulties in their lives. And obviously on a human and on an emotional level, that's very difficult, and they're going through a difficult time. But I have to say, I've always found family law rewarding. At the end of the day, your lawyer can't help you with the emotional end of what's happening to you. But if you're going through a child law or a family law problem, your lawyer can try and sort out the legal end of it, so that at least it may be a little bit of a part of the part of the jigsaw of resolving your family trauma is being addressed, albeit that there are other aspects as well. I think that's possibly one of the reasons that other lawyers find it difficult, because it does have that enormous emotional element in it as well. As time went on, I started to specialise in family law and also in child law. And I suppose in that context, I would have been doing legal aid work, which is probably, I suppose, the way in which I became interested in the Legal Aid Board. In the middle of it all, I went back to do a second master's, you can call it my legal midlife crisis. I decided that I needed something that was academic. I suppose there was part of me still hankering after a bit of academe or something. So I decided in 2010 to to go back to do a master's. I decided my brain was too entrenched in law to do anything else, but I really didn't want to do something that was related to the day job. So I went back to Cardiff University to do a master's in canon law. Now, I'm not a traditionally religious person, but I do find religion interesting. And I have to say, I loved Cardiff. Between 2010 and 2013, I would crave indulgence from judges four times a year to catch a plane on Friday afternoon to go to Cardiff. So as I say, it was highly enjoyable, but highly irrelevant to my life.
So there was a value in the study in itself without necessarily...
Absolutely. And it was, and there was huge value. There was huge value.
And that background in family law, was it that prompted your interest in becoming a member of the Legal Aid Boards? So take you a step beyond doing legal aid work and actually becoming a board member?
I suppose... yes, I mean, of course, my knowledge of the Legal Aid Board was as somebody who was practicing, and in certain circumstances, you would be representing clients who were in receipt of legal aid. And I suppose at that level, obviously, the financial background of the client is relevant in terms of trying to find the resolution to the problem. But legal aid in that context for lawyers is a source of income. It's how you're being paid for the job you do. And but while obviously over a period of years, you become very knowledgeable about legal aid, it is really legal aid in a very, very limited way, because effectively your involvement in legal aid is essentially as a source of income for work you do. I suppose I was interested in the legal in joining the Legal Aid Board in order to get a better understanding of the way in which we address access at the moment to civil justice through giving legal aid, and the whole background to that. And actually, it's fair to say that when I applied through state boards to join the Legal Aid Board, or to seek to be appointed a member of the board, it would have been my belief that I knew a lot about it. But in fact, I think probably one of the lessons that I've learned, having been a board member for 5 years, is how little I actually knew about. I knew a lot about a very limited area of legal aid, but my view broadly, I didn't have a broad view. And of course, you know, at we've a lot of momentum at the moment in the whole access to justice, and that whole concept, and the desirability of pushing an agenda forward which permits access to justice by people who could otherwise not afford it. I think that is something which very much interested me, and of course, it coinciding with, I mean, I joined the board, the first board in 2017. I'd become a senior counsel in 2015, and in consequence was doing less legal aid work, because obviously it's a very limited amount of, there are very limited circumstances in which legal aid would be given for senior counsel. But it did mean that I, not doing so much of it, that I could embrace looking at legal aid as a tool and as a vital tool in access to justice, a little bit in a way that didn't involve me so much on a day-to-day basis, because I would have done a lot of legal aid as a junior counsel. So that was essentially, it was an evolution for me.
I see. And having been appointed to the Legal Aid Board as a member in 2016, and having completed one full term as an ordinary member, what do you think would have been the most important developments or significant developments during your first term on the board?
Well, I suppose one of the things that when you're involved in the Legal Aid Board on a day-to-day basis, and I'm quite sure that the management team, of which you, Donal, are one, I think you probably, as a member of the management team, you know how many balls are in the air at any one time in terms of legal aid. There's no doubt that, so far as I was concerned, I suppose I had never really given huge thought to the areas involving the vast number of different areas that arise and have to be considered and are part of the overall duty and under the auspices of the Legal Aid Board. And I think, I mean, I had practiced in the area of family law, and clearly the vast majority of legal aid in Ireland is in the family law area. But I suppose there were a number of things. I suppose the diversity of areas. I sat in during my first term for a period of time as chair of the Appeals Committee, and for a period of time as a member of the Appeals Committee. And it was in that context, again, for those who aren't familiar with it, and of course you are well familiar, essentially if legal aid is refused at executive level, there is a statutory appeals committee that hears appeals and can look at that again and as to whether or not you're entitled to get legal aid in a given case. And it is only when you, and particularly, as I say, when you sit on the appeals committee, you become aware of the diversity of area that is involved in legal aid. But not only do you have these various different areas where legal aid is sought and legal aid is available, but it's a fast moving thing because there are constantly new things arising. So when I think about the most important developments during my first term on the board, the Awalia scheme was formally launched a month before the last board was established. And obviously that is a scheme that has evolved. I mean, it's now subject to a governance review, but the Awalia scheme in the context of the recession, the huge difficulties that people were experiencing in relation to their family homes and debt, a huge scheme to take on, which was a scheme that was very related to a very particular time in Ireland. And I suppose this is where the Legal Aid Board is a living thing. I mean, you know, you have certain areas that it's been doing for a very long time, and they're very much what the Legal Aid Board is associated with. But you see something like the Awalia scheme, I suppose you could say the same in relation to international protection. It's a reflection on Irish life. As Irish life encounters an issue that has a legal ramification, the Legal Aid Board has to react to that. The Legal Aid Board has to get involved in it and has to take it on. So as I say, the last board, Awalia was just essentially getting up and running at that time. I suppose the other important developments, really important, of course, the co-location. This is the whole thing. What people, a lot of people don't realise that, in fact, the Legal Aid Board not only deals with the whole question of providing legal advice, legal representation for people who satisfy the eligibility criteria, but of course it also now is the National Mediation Service is run through under the auspices of the Legal Aid Board also. And one of the really interesting things, because obviously we all are aware and everybody supports access to justice, and everybody supports the fact that if you cannot you know, obviously there are limitations to everything, but if the people who do not have the financial resources, that they have a way of being of getting legal representation. But of course, in addition to the, and that is a very important part, the legal representation is a very important part, but there is also looking at the most effective way of resolving your dispute. And, you know, you may, litigation may be your only choice, but there are, therefore, the whole question of, it may not be the best choice for you. There may be other better ways and ways that will be easier for you at the end of the day. And this is where mediation comes into play. And this is, and of course, the Legal Aid Board has been, had the National Mediation Service for a long number of years now. And during the lifetime of the last board, of course, we were looking at this whole co-location, this thing of the whole plan of having the mediation facility available alongside the representation for litigation, so that people were fully aware of alternative dispute resolution, and that was readily accessible to them, and that you could have an interaction between these two services in a way that not only meant that you had assistance to resolve your legal dispute, but also assistance in ensuring that you were aware of and had available to you the best way, the best method to resolve that dispute, which might be through alternative dispute resolution or might be through litigation. And so the co-location in terms of the Law Centre and the Family Mediation Centre, I don't know. I mean, there are a number of them now. I mean, we must have, what, 6, 7 at this stage?
There's at least that and some others in the pipeline. So everyone's situation is different, and the solution to everybody's individual problem may vary as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when we were chatting about having this chat this afternoon, I was kind of thinking to myself, I'm not going to mention COVID because we're all kind of suffering COVID exhaustion at this stage. And I possibly will mention it later on just a little bit, because obviously the lifetime of the last board, we kind of had our tail end was kind of completely overtaken by COVID, which of course has changed Irish society and world society, high up and low down. But I suppose before I pass on from the important developments during the first term, I can't not mention the increased amount of communication with external organisations. The external consultative panel, where you have a number of NGOs and others, gateway organisations, legal aid can't live in an ivory tower. Legal aid, people who need it need to know about us. So we can't just be there and kind of just sit around and think that we're there and wait for people to come and find us. If you're going to actually proactively help people who need assistance of some description in resolving their legal disputes, you need to make sure that people know about you, that people know that the service is there and they can come and avail of it. And that's where the external consultative panel is really important. It's really important that the NGOs, that the various organisations who deal with people, state organisations as well, governmental organisations, that they know that the people who come into them, and they, if they need the legal service, that they can divert them off to the Legal Aid Board. And I think that the external consultative panel and the establishment of the external consultative panel was an extremely important part of the work of the last board.
I see. Thank you. I suppose the one interesting question perhaps that listeners would be interested to hear, you know, when somebody is appointed as the chair of a board, as you have recently been just in the last few months. You know, how does this happen? Do you get a phone call, or does somebody, do you get a tap on the shoulder one day, or how do you how do you hear that you were selected to be chairperson?
Well, you got it right the first time, Donal. You get a telephone call, and there's no doubt that it's one of those nowadays, because nobody has landlines anymore. So you answer the phone in a very casual way. You know, when I was a child, the phone like sat on a desk in the hall, and you know, you kind of, it was an occasion to use it. And I sound like I'm a Methuselah, but it was, you kind of went and you made a telephone call and whatever. Whereas now we answer the phone willy-nilly, and we could be anywhere. And indeed, I was not driving, I hasten to add, but I was sitting in my car outside my house. I often get home and decide before I go into the, sort of light mayhem inside, that I return my calls and I'll make a few calls and get the day's calls out of the way, so that my family don't have to listen to it. And I was sitting in the car and the phone rang and I answered it. And at the time, of course, Minister McEntee was on maternity leave, and Minister Humphreys was Minister for Justice. And I answered the phone, and it was the minister. And I have to say, you don't expect to answer the phone and find a minister on the other end of it. But as I say, good news.
And the question that arises, you know, having been appointed chairperson, what would you like the board to achieve during your term of office up between now and 2026?
I suppose when you're involved in any organization, I suppose your primary objective is to hope that you can put in place that you can assist in putting in place a regime that does more of what it does to the best of its ability. And I suppose, and this is something that probably, you know, a number of people don't realise, is that the Legal Aid Board, in terms of eligibility, I mean, the Legal Aid Board at the end of the day is about giving people access to justice. It is about assisting people to resolve their disputes. And so therefore, success in terms of the Legal Aid Board is helping as many people as you can to get the best quality of legal service and outcome in resolving their disputes that you can. Now, you have to be realistic. I mean, everybody could do everything if budgets were endless and whatever. So at the end of the day, that isn't ever going to be the case. So what you have to do, in my view, in any organisation such as with the Legal Aid Board, is that you've got to try and take the resources that you have. Obviously, you don't ask, you don't get, but and obviously you're always going to be seeking to improve those resources. But all resources are finite, and so therefore the main objective has to be to try and, having tried to get as many resources as you can, to use those that you have to the best of achieving, to best achieve the objectives of the organisation. And of course, in many ways with legal aid, there are eligibility criteria. Those eligibility criteria are set down in statute. There's some small degree of flexibility, as you know, Donal, but limited flexibility. So I suppose primarily you're looking to have a situation whereby you ensure that people know that the help is there, that the people who satisfy those eligibility criteria are able to access the resource and do so in as timely a fashion as possible. And as I say, it is a resource situation, but resources and complaining about resources can only get you so far. At the end of the day, you have to grasp the nettle, say, these are my resources and I'm going to try and use them as best I can. So that's the fundamental, is to use your resources and try and focus them that people know that they're there and that they're reaching the people who really need them. And that's the day-to-day work of the Legal Aid Board. Over and above that, of course, you do have to continually look at those eligibility criteria and see, are the eligibility criteria working correctly? Are they ensuring the right people who need the resources most? Are they getting them? And is there any scope for an easing of eligibility criteria so that you're able to give legal aid, give legal assistance to more people? And that's the primary objective. And essentially, that's the core of the Legal Aid Board, is to assist people, as many people who can't afford to fund themselves, to assist those people in getting the support they need to resolve the legal dispute that's arisen. But in addition to that, and this is really, really fundamental for me, I mean, given that the other is the absolutely core objective of the organisation, is as much as you can and trying to ease to the extent that will allow more people who need it to get it, to try and review, tweak, reduce or modify eligibility criteria. But over and above that, when you have an organisation that is involved with dispute resolution, whether through litigation, mediation or any other form of resolution, the people, your people, the people who do it, the people who give the service, have to be respected. And it's really important. The culture of the organisation is really important. You know, when professionals decide that they are going to spend their professional life or give a portion of their professional life to facilitating access to a just outcome to people who could not otherwise afford it, that in itself is a huge commitment. And we should recognise that, and we should stand tall about the fact that people who have given this commitment in their professional lives. So in that, I'm very interested in looking at the culture of the organisation, the diversity of the organisation, and ensuring that the people within it realise that what they do is fundamentally important in terms of enabling those who need justice, who can't afford it, to get it. And that is a good thing to go home with at night. And people need to appreciate that. The people within our community, within our organisation, need to realise how important their role is in facilitating people to get access to justice.
And in over the coming years, would you say that there are some key challenges coming down the tracks towards us as an organisation, whether it be to do with the legal environment or the delivery of our services?
Yeah, I mean, I think this brings us back to the whole question that, yeah, there's always something new because society changes. And as social problems change, you then find that people need legal aid in order to address that particular problem. So there's no doubt that as we proceed and as the current board progresses along its way, there will be things that will arise. I suppose there are some in particular that are kind of pretty close upon us for example, the assisted decision making legislation, that will be a new area of focus for the Legal Aid Board in due course. In addition to that, the O'Malley report in relation to the provision of legal services for the victims of sexual violence, that has started, the implementation of that has had a degree of rollout. It potentially will have a much greater degree of rollout. And these are areas, these are growing areas that are developing areas or new areas that are evolving that will significantly impact legal aid and the role and these services and the range of services being offered by the Legal Aid Board. I suppose over the hugely overarching feature that will come is in the context of the Family Justice Review and the whole question of reforming of family justice. The Department of Justice is leading the Family Justice Oversight Group. We are represented on it. Our CEO is there. And that will potentially fundamentally change the whole family law court structure and the whole family law environment. So I think that those are just three of the areas. There are many other things that will potentially occupy the mind of this particular legal aid board, of the statutory board of the Legal Aid Board. For example, and I suppose fundamental to us, will be the proposed civil legal aid review. And as to, we don't really have a timeline in relation to that, but it is very much out there and very much on the cards. And that will fundamentally be examining where we're at. Our bread and butter will be the focus of that review. And that's something that as an organisation, I look forward very much to working with the executive, the senior management team, in formulating how we as the board will address the civil legal aid review and how most effectively to ensure both that the organisation's view is put forward and is clearly there, but also that people within, that individuals within the board, also within the Legal Aid Board, who, after all, we are the people who have both on a community, on an organisational level, the knowledge of legal aid. But of course, we also have individuals within the board who have huge knowledge of legal aid and how civil legal aid should work. So there's no doubt that formulating precisely how we, as the people with the greatest amount of knowledge and experience of civil legal aid, how exactly we ourselves will formulate our community view, or community views, because there's undoubtedly going to be a diversity of them, in order to participate in the civil legal aid review. Of course, the other big scenario is the whole question of criminal legal aid and whether or not it's been there for a while and at the moment may or may not be coming down the tracks. But there is no doubt that it would be an extraordinarily significant event in the event that the Legal Aid Board was essentially the organisation administering criminal legal aid as well as civil legal aid. And as I say, that's a burden or indeed a new responsibility perhaps that has ebbed and flowed as far as the board is concerned over a number of years. But there is no doubt that that would be huge challenge if in the coming years if that was to come about.
So I suppose the one final question to put to you, bearing in mind your busy schedule with your own practice and now your chairperson of the Legal Aid Board role, and you know we hear a lot about work-life balance at the moment and so on, Do you have a favorite way of unwinding from your work pressures when the day's work is done?
I'm probably not the best work-life balance person to ask. I'm afraid I'm probably a little bit of a workaholic. I suppose my big downtime activity is cooking. I find cooking massively relaxing, and you're not getting the name of it out, even if you get out thumb screws. But I do have a cookery Instagram account.
We'll have to set our research unit to work on
that. Ah, there you go.
Nolas, I would just like to say thank you very much indeed for joining us. It's been a very interesting and informative interview. And thank you also to our listeners for joining us on this, our first Legal Aid Board podcast. We hope to have others for you soon. And thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, Donal.